God has a sense of humor. I am firmly convinced of that. I was supposed to have done chapel 2 weeks ago when there would only have been about half this many people in here. And so I'd like to welcome you to Preview Day. This really is us as far as on the silliness scale on a certain level on Wednesdays. I am Dr. Vicki Brown. I am the director of the Bachelor of Science here at Criswell College, and it's in education. So when people ask me, so what do you teach? I say, I teach teachers to be teachers. And so I'm the only Bachelor of Science program here at Criswell College. I've been here 10 years, and I am incredibly thankful for all the brilliant people I get to spend every day with. I often go back to God has a sense of humor, and I tell students, I may not be the sharpest knife in the drawer, but I'm incredibly stubborn and was able to finally get my doctorate. Goodness, have I had it 10 years? I've had it 10 years. And be able to teach at this amazing institution and spend every day with incredible, incredible young people that sometimes challenge us. but it's amazing to watch as they walk across the stage. I wanted to start with a little bit of a history lesson, but before I do that, I have to make an announcement. I almost forgot. Okay. One pair off. And a different pair on. There. Y'all just wait. One of these days, you'll be carrying around 2, 3, and 4 pairs of glasses and try to keep up with them. I have been asked to make this announcement. This is from Dr. David Brooks. We have a new course that is going to launch in the spring, and this is how he would like you to think of it. It looks ironic that Proverbs addresses young men to make them wise, but at the end, the epitome of wisdom is a wise woman. At creation, God gave one verse to the creation of man, but 6 to the creation of woman. The angel of the Lord appeared to a woman twice before he appeared to a man once. The first person to say God had a royal Messiah was a woman. These facts don't mean God exalts women more highly than men, but they do mean God gives to women more dignity than they often receive. God has lessons to teach us about women. For women and from women, we owe it to him to learn what he's teaching. So, next semester, on Thursday afternoons, Dr. Brooks is offering the course, Women in the Old Testament. He has invited 10 women to give 12 of the lessons. 5 of the guests have doctorates, and 2 more have almost completed their doctorates. They are professors at DTS, DBU, and Criswell. Another is a veteran missionary to Israel, and all are experienced Bible teachers. God gave us the names of more than 120 women in the Old Testament, plus the stories of others. Christian men and women should pay attention to what the Lord teaches us through them. Again, this is Women in the Old Testament, next spring. So, if you're interested, keep that on your radar. There goes that. Now it's my turn. And by the way, as my students know, I wander in the classroom, and everybody's fair game. I was on the committee, let's see, in 2017, that created what's up here. This is known here at Criswell College as the graduate profile. A group of people got into a room, I was one of them, and we asked ourselves, when somebody walks across the stage at Criswell College and we hand them that little piece of paper and turn them loose on an unsuspecting world, what do we want them to have developed into over the course of time they've spent with us? And so over about the last 6 weeks, we've been going through this. And so Dr. Woods explained about ambassadors, that they are going to be able to carry Christ to other people. And then Dr. Spring explained about cultivators. When they get to those people, they'll be able to communicate effectively with them and cultivate those relationships. But as Dr. Bridger brought up last week, 2 weeks ago, not all relationships are smooth. We do live in a fallen world. So we need peacemakers. And the only true way to peace is through Christ and a relationship with Him. And then Dr. Corder, otherwise known as Chief of Police Corder, explained about the need for being a problem solver, that this world is full of problems that are very complex and will not be solved with simplistic answers, whereas somebody, as I often say, grabs a microphone, makes a little speech, says, this is how we're going to fix this, and just has a tendency to create other problems. I then have been tasked with the last part. And I have been wrestling with this word for weeks. What does it mean to be professional when you graduate from a Christian organization, otherwise known as Criswell College? And so when I first started thinking about talking to you today, I sort of thought, well, I'm kind of talking about the little cherry on top. That if you're a professional, you build relationships, you're a great communicator, you know how to do conflict management, you are a critical thinker, and solving those problems in those organizations and communities. So this should be pretty easy. And then the more I thought about it, the more I thought, no, it's not that easy. And so, what does it mean to be a professional in the Christian realm? What does it mean? Micah, what do you think?
To be able to properly interpret scripture according to context of where it actually is.
Okay. Ooh, very professional sounding. Let me pick another victim. This is fun. Dr. Keyser, what does it mean to be professional in the Christian realm? And you cannot pick Micah's answer, nor can you say he took your answer.
Can you say that in class?
Sure.
Also, never give someone a microphone. That's dangerous.
And I'm going to put you on a timer.
Okay. I think my answer is the holistic pursuit of faithfulness.
Faithfulness. Okay. Let's see. I'm going to pick one more. Hi, Sarah.
I would say that it is, well, part of it is how you conduct yourself so that you're conducting yourself in a manner that portrays Christ so that other people see that.
Okay. Thank you. You know, I've been thinking about this and thinking about this. And nobody said what the typical answer is, because I did put it into context of in a Christian realm. What do you think the world thinks professionals are? What's a professional? Say you graduated from Harvard. And you're a professional. What does that mean for your future? What is that? Dr. Wurzler is smiling.
Well, when you brought up Harvard, I'll just say making a lot of money.
Oh, thank you. And I did not pay him to say that. That's what the world thinks. That's what professionals are. Doctors and lawyers and accountants and teachers. And they're supposed to make a lot of money. And the verse that we've chosen with our graduate profile that goes along with professional is this one. Do you see a man skillful in his work? He will stand before kings. So I've thought about that too. And I've gone, huh, I've been doing this profession for almost 50 years. I know. I've earned these gray hairs. And so I've never stood before a king, not an earthly king. And I thought, so does that mean I'm a failure? That I'm not a professional? There's lots of days I don't feel very skillful at my work. I struggle and kind of slog my way through. So does that mean I'm not professional? Dr. Woods and I were just talking about this last week. The world says that professionals make a lot of money. I just told y'all when I first started, I work with brilliant people. We're not making a lot of money. Does that mean we're not professionals? The world would say, you're at that very small Christian college over in Dallas, somewhere around Baylor Hospital, I don't know. So if they're breathing, they can teach there. They really don't have to be all that qualified. We're small. And I'm going, sometimes you really start wondering. Our motto here, though, as I kept thinking about it, says that we are shaped by Scripture and sent to serve. It doesn't say we are sent to make a lot of money. And I thought, so if we're sent to serve, what does God expect from us as professionals? Hello? There. A lot of Christian institutions throw around the word servant leadership. My doctorate is in higher education leadership, which I think is hysterically funny. That, well, you have a doctorate and it says this, so you could actually run Criswell College. Dr. Creamer has nothing to worry about. Not at all. So when I'm looking at we're going to be professionals, then I go back to servants. If we're servants, what does that mean? And it's a whole way of thinking that is so paradoxical to the world, that is so upside down. And God, Scripture is full of paradoxes. You have to be weak to be strong. You're not supposed to fear, but the world's a scary place. And so, what is involved in being a servant? And in that cute, I did not come up with that. That's out of a book, by the way. I want to give credit. And so it has to do with your heart, your head, your hands, your habits. And so your heart is the real you. And we all wear masks. And we all pretend everything's great. I love it. How you doing? Oh, I'm fine. But the real you, your heart, that's what's driving your decisions. Those of you that are here on preview day today, you have decisions to make. And I would hope that you're seeking God's will in those decisions. And those of you that are here for the first semester that are sitting back here, I really, really hope you sought God in making that decision. Because the real you is going to come out. It always comes out when there's things don't go quite right. That paper you got back that you just knew you got an A on, and it's just bleeding. All of you in the Roots class this week. Yep. Yeah. How did you feel when you got that paper back? That's the real you. And so I went to Proverbs. And yes, I love the King James. I love the language of the King James. I make no apology about the King James, but you do need to know my verses are in the King James. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. The real you will show. Are you really a servant, or is it all about you? The current feeling about the Generation Z, or the homelanders, as some researchers call you, is that you are extremely narcissistic, and it's all about you, and you're the TikTok generation, and everything they come up with is really negative. I actually see a lot of great hope in our young students. And I keep looking at y'all going, okay, so y'all are going to be the one that's going to run my nursing home one day. I really hope that I am not disappointed, that your heart is trying to learn about God and follow Him. But from our heart, it's going to start driving your decisions. And part of professionalism is making decisions. The average teacher in an elementary classroom, over the course of that 9 months, they've actually kind of put a counter to it, and I know it's way under. The best they can figure out is that that elementary teacher makes approximately 1 million decisions in that 9 months. 1 million choices that affect lives. And so every decision you make is so incredibly important. I'm just always amazed. God, in all His sovereignty, allows us to make choices. I love the book of Deuteronomy. The book of Deuteronomy, choose, choose, choose. What are you going to choose? And those choices reveal the true you. What's in your heart? What are you choosing? And be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. All of you sitting back here in the rows right now, I hope that's what you're doing. if you don't want your thoughts, your presuppositions to be challenged, college may not be for you. Because it's all about your mind. We're going to keep pushing and pushing and pushing about your mind so that you can prove what's good, acceptable, perfect, the will of God. And from that, we're going to see your actions. We had a great speaker yesterday in chapel, and he did a call to action because your actions can affect change. The world tells you nothing's ever going to change. That's a lie. Just by accepting Christ, you're changed. And so think through that you and your thoughts, your actions get to affect change. And here we plant in Colossians. And some of the upperclassmen, please don't have a reaction because I picked Colossians. Whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men. And this is really what professional looks like in a Christian realm. I was in an institution one time where we had to take a major pay cut, an educational site of higher education as a professor. They pulled us all into a room, that's never good, and they had to give the news. We were all taking a major pay cut. And one of the professors got so angry, she stormed out of the room and slammed a glass door. Yeah, not professional. And our president was in the meeting. He's the one delivering this news. And he looked at me, because I'm just sitting there, and he looked at me and said, "So, are you going to leave too?" And I looked and I said, "I don't work for you. I work for God. He takes care of me. If this is what he's doing, it's going to be fine. I'm not worried about it." And he goes, "Well, okay, let's keep going." That was not just, you know, lip service. That's how I really operate in this realm. And so, because my boss is God, therefore, when I do my job, it's for him. My choices are for him. The way I dress, the way I talk, the way I treat others, what I do when things get sticky, nasty, it's for him. So if he's my boss, everything else falls into place. But I have to practice. Some days are hard. Some days are very hard. So it takes practice. But he gave us an example. He gave us an example. So instead of servant leadership, that's never in Scripture. I always think that's so funny. Nowhere in there does Jesus say, "I'm calling you to be a servant leader." He just stops. "I'm calling you to be a servant." And so my biblical example, and I'm going to have to go along or else Dr. Sanders is going to get mad at me. And that's the life of Joseph. Joseph was 17 when his brothers threw him in the pit. And he sold into slavery. And he goes to work for Potiphar. And we're not quite sure, you know, about how long he'd been there. But he's 17. That's the same age as a lot of you or real close to you. And yet, as a slave in Potiphar's house, he did such a good job because he knew who his boss was. It wasn't Potiphar. It was God that he's put in charge of Potiphar's house. And then, through no fault of his own, he's thrown in prison. You know, we look at the life of Joseph. I was thinking about this morning. We know the end. He He didn't know how long he was going to be a slave. He didn't know how long he was going to be in prison. And prison back then was not prison like today. And yet, he knew who his boss was. It wasn't the guard. It was God. And so he just kept being faithful. And they put him in charge. We really had the prisoner running the prison. So that then, when he went to the palace and stood before a king, the king said, you know what? I'm looking for someone who is discreet and wise. Discreet means you know how to act. And you're not going to embarrass me. And you're wise, you're thoughtful, you're a problem solver. So Joseph was put over all of Egypt except for Potiphar. And I thought, oh my goodness. He stood before a king. And I came back to, I've never stood before a king. And this morning on the way here, I started crying. And I went, I stand before a king every day. All day. His name is Jesus. He is my king. So even if on days I don't feel very professional, I don't feel like I'm a success, I don't feel like I'm effective, I am standing before my king, which means it matters. It matters how I talk, it matters how I dress. It matters how I treat others because he's my boss. And I hope in this room he's your boss and that one day we will hear, well done, thy good and faithful servant.